Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the Sports Inquirer podcast. I am your host, E. Marcel Portout. Hope everyone's had a good few days out there, and we're recording another edition of the podcast before the weekend gets started. So I'm going to talk about some things that have gone on since we've last spoke. I'm going to give you a preview of UFC 157, which takes place in Anaheim on Saturday, and some other mixed martial arts thoughts as well. Along with that, the NBA trade deadline literally just passed about an hour ago. So just some thoughts on what I've seen the first few days of the second half of the NBA season and trades that happened and didn't happen. Also going to talk about some miscellaneous news and notes from the world of sports. And finally, a different edition of Ruffling My Feathers. Usually when I do that, my Ruffling Feathers portion of the show is something that has me angry or disappointed in the world of sports or in life in general. But it's going to be more of a tribute or just an homage or a look back on a legendary sports and entertainment figure that recently passed away. So we're going to go over all of those things and have a good time as well here on the Sports Inquirer podcast. Making a determination right here on the podcast live on the Sports Inquirer Network. Next time, and every time I do an MMA post, we're doing a walkouts theme from a different MMA artist. That was incredible. And if for those of you not familiar with mixed martial arts, that was the walkout music of the recently retired heavyweight fighter Fedor Emelianenko. And I heard that a few days ago, and that's one of my favorite walkout themes ever. And I had to have that coming into the break. So, since we're talking about mixed martial arts, that got me in the mood to talk about UFC 157, which will take place in Anaheim, California on Saturday night. And the main event is Ronda Rousey versus Liz Carmucci. And we'll go over all of that as well as Hendo versus Lyoto Machida. But just some general MMA thoughts that have taken place since my last podcast. I hit on it a little in my last podcast when I was doing some reviews and analysis. Anthony Pettis is actually going to face Jose Aldo for the featherweight title in August. And I thought Pettis was really going to get a title shot in the lightweight division and get a rematch against Benson Henderson. But since Benson is facing Gil Melendez in April, I believe, I guess Pettis didn't want to wait until towards the end of the year and maybe into early 2014 for that title shot. So he's going to move down a weight class and face Aldo. And interesting sort of part about this is Aldo's gonna be second title defense against an elite fighter in the lightweight division, which is a weight class above the featherweight division, which the belt is at right now. And there have always been stories about Aldo, how he sometimes has difficulties cutting weight and he's going to move up in the weight class in the future. And right now he's staying at lightweight and he's staying at featherweight and guys are actually coming down to face him. So there'll be plenty of time to analyze that fight when it comes along. But I'm interested to see how Pettis actually handles Aldo and not being a quicker guy in the division and facing a guy who's probably just as big and strong. Also, John Fitch and numerous other fighters were cut by the UFC in the past few days. Not really surprised to see Fitch get eliminated. Guys who are fans that have been reading my post on the sportsinquirer.net know that I have been very critical of John Fitch in the past. And I don't necessarily think he's boring, but he lacks aggressiveness and finishing skills, and that's why he gets to a lot of decisions and even had a draw against BJ Penn. And I think that when you fight in that style and you have a lot of welterweights in that top tier, and we're going to go over a few of them in my next thoughts, you really have to separate yourself from the crowd if you really want to be a contender. And Fitch is probably, he's still a very good fighter. I would still have him in probably my top 10 as far as overall welterweights in all of mixed martial arts. But I can understand why the UFC cut him. I personally would have not done that. I would have used him for as card fillers for a lot of these different events. And the UFC has a lot of fights coming up. And you need quality fighters to fill out the fight cards. And John Fitch, if anything, is definitely a quality fighter. But as far as the entertainment side of things, I could definitely see why they made that decision. I really haven't touched too much on Bellator in the past few podcasts. I'm slowly getting into it. I watched it when it was on MTV2, but it was on Friday nights, which is actually a work night for me as far as my journalism jobs and just other things like that. Friday night's a tough night, but Thursday night's much better. Matter of fact, I'm working an engagement tonight, but when I get home, I'll be home in time to see some more Bellator. So once I get into watch some more of that, I'll analyze that a little bit more for you. But all you MMA fans out there, I realize the world exists beyond the UFC in the United States. So we're going to get into some more Bellator as well. Rory McDonald has taken himself out of the UFC 158 card that he was supposed to originally face Carlos Condit, but Rory suffered a neck injury. So now he is going to be out of that card. And now Johnny Hendricks is actually going to face Condit, which is actually a fight I like. I actually would prefer to see that fight, in all honesty, than McDonald versus Condit. Hendricks, I think, has been a guy who has gotten a little bit of the shaft or shortchanged in getting that title shot. He was usurped by Nick Diaz, and even Rory was probably looked at in a higher regard within the UFC. However, I think that now that Hendricks is going to face Condon, if he gets past Condon, he's going to get his fight against George St. Pierre or Nick Diaz, whoever wins that fight coming up next month. So that was interesting to see as well. And I like what UFC 160 has done. It's pretty much a semifinals for the heavyweight title. You're going to have current champion Cain Velasquez. He's going to face Antonio Bigfoot Silva in one fight. And then also on that card, you're going to have Alistair Overeem first face Junior Dos Santos. So I like how pretty much the winners of those whose fights are going to face each other probably later on in 2013 or maybe early 2014. So I like how the UFC is starting to kind of do that with their fights as well. Even back in UFC 158, they were going to have McDonald face Condit and St. Pierre face Diaz on the same card, which kind of served as a semifinal as well for the welterweight division. So I like what they've done with that as far as getting all of the eyeballs looking in one division at one event. And looking at that as a determining factor for other people to say, okay, this is where the division stands, and we can move forward with that. So those are some of the MMA thoughts that I have outside of the event taking place this Saturday, which is UFC 157. And I wrote in my post about my predictions and some analysis of the two main fights from the card, but I'll go over some of those with you as well. As I stated earlier, the main event is Ronda Rousey versus Liz Carmucci, which has been hyped very well. Obviously, it's the first fight, a female fight, in UFC history. And along with that, you have a very popular figure in Ronda Rousey who has really become not only the face of women's MMA, but one of the top five personalities in all of the sport as far as endorsements and media exposure. And that's been really good. Plus, she can fight. You know, and that's really the biggest thing that, in the end, that's what it comes down to. I enjoy all mixed martial arts, men, women, amateurs. I enjoy all types. But the bottom line is if you can fight, I will give you attention. And she is an excellent fighter. And so is Camucci as well. Both of them are excellent grapplers. And the problem for Camucci is that Rousey does everything a little bit better than she does as far as the strengths go. With Rousey, you're going to get a lot of grappling. The infamous armbar. She's submitted her last five opponents with the same armbar move in the first round. But I think that you're going to see a little bit more from Rousey. She's really worked on her stand-up game. The fight's going to last more than one round. I will say that. And in the end, I have Rousey winning by submission in the second round. Probably by armbar. You'd like to see maybe something a little different, just being greedy as a fan, maybe with a choke or a leg lock or something like that. But it's going to last more than one round. And you're going to, I think you're going to see her get, Rousey get tested a little bit. I think Liz is going to keep her distance, use the jab, and is not going to succumb that immediately to that submission. So that's my prediction as far as Rousey goes, winning that fight. The other fight, and this one is for the old school heads like me, who are very, very interested in the light heavyweight division. You're going to have Dan Henderson versus Lyoto Machida in a fight that surprisingly has not happened yet, despite the paths of both of these men. I'll admit it, I am a big Team Quest fan. I've been following Dan Henderson since his days in Pride, and even remember when he was an Olympian back in wrestling. So I've been following Henderson's career a really long time and enjoy seeing him fight, and I think he's an outstanding competitor. As far, and Machida as well. I was very skeptical of Machida at first when he first, you know, came into the UFC. I saw the defensive skills, saw a lot of the karate style, and really didn't find it appealing. But I had to educate myself to not expecting guys just to go in there and swing for the fences and going for or takedowns immediately. Machida has a different style technique with the Shuto Karate, which I have to give him credit for, because it is very different than any other style that you will see in MMA as far as the push kicks and just the different hand movements that he has. As far as the fight itself, you want to say it's traditional style of the wrestler versus the striker, with Henderson playing the wrestler since he has Olympic experience in that, and of course Machida with the karate striking. But both guys have shown variances of that, you know, within the past few fights. You've seen Henderson really rely on his stand-up and behind his heavy left hand and right hand as well, get numerous knockouts from different fighters. He had that excellent knockdown or knockout of Bisping a few years ago. His last fight was over a year ago for Henderson with an impressive 5-round victory and decision over Shogun Hua. So you've seen him use that stand-up as his more of as a base now than his wrestling, which is where his background is. And as far as Machida goes, yes, he does have, he's probably the best defensive striker, kind of an oxymoron, but as far as a guy who uses his defensive skills in the division, probably the best out of anyone that's going right now. But he's also increased his striking as well. I think after his loss to Shogun Hua a few years ago, he realized he needed to be more aggressive with his stand-up, and you've seen that in his past few fights. And he has shown much improvement in that. And his last fight against Bader was arguably his best performance that he's had, at least in the UFC and maybe ever. He used that Bader had no chance in that fight to even touch, you know, Machida. And Machida got that knockdown and got the TKO in the end. So both guys are coming in off of wins. I believe the winner of this fight's probably going to face the winner of Chael Sonnen and John Jones for that light heavyweight title. So in the end, when I wrote my post, I actually picked Henderson to win by decision. And I think I was a little bit biased in that. I said I have personal feelings for Henderson, and he's one of my favorite fighters in and out of the ring. I like what he stands for. And I'm going to stick with that in my podcast. I'm going to stick with that decision. But if I had to rethink it, I'd probably pick Machida if I had a strong interest in it financially or otherwise. I just think his defense is going to be too much for Henderson to handle. And Machida is probably going to eke out a decision. He's going to get some takedowns. Henderson's going to really struggle getting close to Machida. The distance is going to be an issue. And in the end, I think Machida will probably eke out a victory there. And there's some other fights on the card that I have shown some interest in. I like Uriah Faber to get the win over Ivan Menhivar. And that's actually a really good fight, too. Do not sleep on Ivan. He is an excellent fighter as well. Faber is a multiple-time champion. He's a legitimate contender in any weight class he decides to fight in. I'm going to take Faber, but there might be a potential upset there as far as perception goes. And also, I have Josh Koscheck winning his fight as well over Robbie Lawler. Lawler's had an up-and-down career in Strikeforce, returning to UFC for the first time in a few years. Koscheck's actually hasn't fought in a long time as well. A lot of guys with layoffs in this fight card. I think at least most of these guys have been off 200 days or more, some of them even more than a year. So you're going to see a lot of ring rust as well with these fights. So something to look out for there. So those are my thoughts on UFC 157. any thoughts or analysis you have for me, please head over to my site, thesportsinquirer.net, and leave your opinions there. You can also hit me up on Twitter at sportsinquirer. And finally, you can go to send an email to me at sportsinquirer@gmail.com. So once again, this is the Sports Inquirer podcast. We're going to hit up some news about the NBA trade deadline. You know, like everyone out there, I was watching the latest edition of the Celtics and the Lakers last night. And I'll get to my thoughts on Jerry Buss in my ruffling my feathers section. I wasn't going to do a little bit of a tease, but we're going to talk about his legacy as an owner of the Lakers. But watching that game and seeing the emotions from the crowd and Magic Johnson in the studio with ESPN, you know, seeing all of that going on, it was interesting that Dwight Howard had his best game as a Laker. During that performance, he had 24 points and 12 rebounds in the victory over the Celtics. And the big trade deadline dramas of Dwight Howard, every other day, it's either family members talking about him or he's unhappy or making certain moves behind the scenes that have received disapproval from everybody. I was glad to finally see him be aggressive, you know, in the post and, you know, take some chances there and dominate. So I was happy to see him do that, and that was, you know, a really good situation. Also from last night, seeing James Harden score 46 on the Oklahoma City Thunder, his former team, to give him that big victory over the Thunder. Houston's a team that you got to look out for and be aware of. I really like that backcourt of him and Jeremy Lin, who had 29-8 in that contest as well. I didn't think that backcourt would work at first, but they have made it happen. And they actually made some nice moves as well, trading for Thomas Robinson yesterday before that trade deadline and not really giving up much. They're really making a push, I think, to be a major player in the offseason of this upcoming year. They're going to make the playoffs. They may even sneak around in there. But overall, they're making some really good moves. So I like what I've seen from them. The game before that, I caught at the end of the New Orleans and Cleveland game with Kyrie Irving, putting up 35 in the victory for the Cavs. As I stated in my last podcast, I really think he's going to be the third best point guard in the NBA by the end of the season. Now, it does have a lot of liberties with the Cavaliers that other guys do not have to be restricted to. When you look at my top two guys, Tony Parker and Chris Paul, they have better teams around them. They have better players to work around and pass to. Kyrie Irving really gets to control the ball and make his own decisions as far as scoring and passing or doing anything else. So he has a lot more leeway, which leads to probably more points and flexibility. But overall, he's going to be an outstanding player, and he showed that last night. My poor New York Knicks gave up 74 points to the Indiana Pacers in their loss last night in the first half. They gave up 74 first half points in their defeat. And the Knicks are my team. They're my peoples. I really want to see them do well. But seeing how they're looking has been very disappointing. And I don't know what the situation is there with Amari Stoudemire. And he got emotional last night and got it, you know, thrown out and everything like that. I don't know what's going on there. The defense has been borderline terrible in the past few weeks. Jason Kidd, he had a really good first half, but they were able to get Felton in there and, you know, give Kidd less minutes. But now that Felton's been out and they've had to use Kidd more, he's wearing down. He's really looking his age right now. The Knicks are in some major trouble, you know, as far as making a postseason run, because I really think that you're going to see some teams usurp them. Miami's still the best team in the East, but you have Indiana there, Chicago. The Nets are It's kind of starting to get a little bit better there. So there's some teams out there that are going to be a lot better than the Knicks when the postseason comes around. And that's going to be disappointing for fans like me and a lot of others. As far as I did the podcast and recorded it at this time because I was hoping to have some news on some major trades. So Josh Smith or maybe one of the Celtics or, you know, some other folks, maybe even Dwight Howard getting traded. None of that happened. It was really more of a deal of guys staying with their teams during this trade deadline. The Josh Smith situation, I don't know how they're going to rectify that because for the last 3 days, being down here in Atlanta, all I've been hearing is about how much he's going to get traded. And it seemed like a foregone conclusion that he was going to go to San Antonio, maybe Boston, Clippers, Milwaukee made a big push for him apparently, and he's still a Hawk. And he's not going to re-sign with the Hawks. I don't know what the story is. I don't know if the Hawks are trying to get Smith and convince him to sign his best friend Dwight Howard and get him back to Atlanta. But none of that's going to happen, I don't think, in the offseason. So I don't understand why the Hawks kept him. I don't understand what the Utah Jazz did. They kept Millsap and Jefferson, Paul Millsap and Al Jefferson, to their roster. Both of those guys are free agents at the end of the season. It's really, I mean, it's good if you want to be a 7 or 8 seed in the West and end up losing in the first round to San Antonio or Oklahoma City. But as far as building for the future, you have to get Enes Kanter more playing time. You got to get Derek Favors on the court more often. Even Gordon Hayward, you need to get those young guys incorporated into your rotation. And Jefferson and Millsap are guys who are just taking up and clicking up time and clogging up the lane for some of the younger guys to get a moment. I understand you may want to keep one of them and keep him in the fold and re-sign him. I get that, but you can't keep both of those guys. I personally would have tried to get rid of both of them. And it's not, and they're good players and they're good soldiers. I mean, they really work with the Utah system. But if you look at towards the future, you have to work towards looking what you want to do down the line. And I believe that one or both of those guys may not re-sign with them. And you should have gotten some value for that. So I'm a little bit disappointed that there were not more trades in the trade deadline for me to discuss here on the podcast. All this does is make for a really fun offseason because there's going to be a lot of guys out there. Obviously, you have Howard and Bynum, Andrew Bynum in Philly. Chris Paul is going to be a free agent. Josh Smith and a host of others. Brandon Jennings is going to be a guy that, if you need a point guard, is going to be available for you on a restricted level from the Bucks. And obviously, Jefferson and Millsap, who I just discussed. There are going to be a lot of guys who are going to be looking for major contracts, so that's going to make the offseason a little bit more enjoyable. So those are some NBA thoughts that I have here on the podcast. Next, we're going to get some miscellaneous news and notes here on the Sports Inquirer podcast. One of my favorite times of the year is always when the Daytona 500 comes around, and we're looking forward here on the Sports Inquirer Network of seeing that 500 take place on Sunday afternoon. Just some general thoughts on what to expect when you see it out there. Biggest thing, if you're listening to the podcast, you know that Danica Patrick has the pole position for the Daytona 500, first woman to ever do that. Major move for her and for the organization. We'll have to see what she does beyond that as far as competing for the actual win. She's going to lead a few laps and get some bonus points there. But as far as overall, you know, still very skeptical of her racing skills. And she has the right equipment. She is backed up by the right folks over at Stuart Haas. So she has the car to make an impact and get maybe a top 10 finish, which would really be a good accomplishment for her, you know, for her first Daytona 500. So that'd be a good situation for her. So we're going to look forward to that. Jeff Gordon is on the outside of the first row as well. And Jeff is one to race three times, I believe. So he's going to definitely be a contender, you know, to win the title or the Daytona 500. As far as the overall title, we got Brad Keselowski, who's going to be attempting to repeat as a champion, which has only been done a handful of times. I think only five guys have done it in the history of NASCAR. So he's going to have the target on his back and trying to make a major run there. Jimmy Johnson is going to be right there, consistent guy. It's actually, you know, he's been 2 years since he's won the title, because the year before last, he actually had Tony Stewart win the championship. So for Jimmy Johnson, the five-timer, that's actually a long run of him not winning the championship. So we know he's going to be a big contender. Kasey Kahne, this might be his time. Had a top five finish overall in points last season. Really is a young guy who merged his talents and had the right equipment. He's going to be a major contender, I think, this season as well. As far as guy I don't trust, I was happy to see Clint Bowyer get his moment. He had a top five finish in points overall as well. But he actually, I'm really not necessarily concerned with him. I don't know if he could repeat that performance, you know, overall. And once the races start, we'll do a lot more analysis of the actual activities. It's really tough to make a decision or make predictions on who's going to win the title, at least at NASCAR, because so you have to see how to do the first few races, because there's so many factors in what can go right or wrong. But as far as guys that had a good finish last year and did well, Clint Bowyer is one that I'd be not necessarily looking to be repeating that high-level performance. Kyle Busch is still the most talented guy in all of racing as far as guys who have the most talent, but he needs to find some more consistency. But that's someone that I think could be a title contender as well if he gets it together. Kevin Harvick, I wanted to put in that level as well, but he's in his last year of the contract. There seems to be too much dysfunction out there. You even hear from reporters of this him being a lame duck and this is being his walk year. I think that's too many distractions for him to be a title contender. I'd love to see Tony Stewart make it back to title contention as well. Disappointing year by his standards last year. So hopefully we can see him do a little bit better as well. And so those are my NASCAR thoughts. We're going to get, obviously, Monday's podcast. We'll have a big analysis of what happened there. I hope that I get to see a lot of the race along with all of you, and we'll talk more about it. Another thing I really want to talk about as well, or just think about, is that NCAA investigation against Miami. Amateurism and the NCAA are really on it's an interesting situation right now. They're really in a spot where the definition of the student athlete and amateurism, I think, is starting to get dissolved, with the NCAA admitting faults or faulty processes in their investigation of it. I think you're starting to see the Institute of the NCAA really being hit to its core, and some revamping is going to be needed and some changes with the process of how things are done. And so that story is going to develop, you know, over time, but I just wanted to, you know, state that out there and see what happens there. So some general thoughts I have about the NBA. And the last thing we're going to do to close out the show is we're going to talk about something that had my thoughts and ruffled my feathers. If you watched the game last night with the Lakers and the Celtics, you saw the touching tribute for Jerry Buss, the owner of the Lakers, who deceased a few days ago. And when growing, it brought back memories of when I was a younger kid living in New York City, and the franchise, that NBA franchise that you always admired and looked at as the cornerstone of the league, were the Lakers. They had Magic Johnson and James Worthy, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. They had the yellow uniforms. They had that Showtime flair and attitude that really sold the league on an international level. You know, a lot of people like to talk about Michael Jordan and, you know, his contributions and everything that he did for the league. And we talked about Jordan last week. But I think also you have to give respect to the Lakers and their presence in the league as that modern franchise that everyone wanted to emulate. You saw it over all walks of life. You see the Cowboys with Jerry Jones trying to make that glamorous role of that marquee team for the league. And with the contributions of Jerry Buss from drafting Magic Johnson and ushering in all of the, and Pat Riley, and bringing that style and winning to the NBA, was left an indelible footprint on the league. For a league like the NBA, which sells individuality more than any other sport, professional sport in the United States, the Lakers were the benchmark for that. And they had a little bit of a lull after Magic Johnson retired. And what did they do? They signed Shaquille O'Neal to be that next guy to not only carry the franchise, but to be a major contributor towards the league. And then drafting Kobe Bryant and seeing the envisioning that this guy, this young kid out of high school, had the ability to be a face of the league as well, was just outstanding ownership by him. He always had a, always realized that while winning is important and the most important thing, you have to have the style and the charisma to make it go as well. I don't think there was an owner or a team that fit their city better than the Los Angeles Lakers. And I say, you just look at the uniforms, you look at the coaching styles, you look at just the attention that they would all get. You see all of that, and you see a direct contribution to ownership in making that happen. So just seeing all of the tributes that were going on and from all of the players and the coaches and family members, you know, to him, it really made me reflect on my younger days and seeing how influential the Lakers are as a franchise and as an organization, and how it's going to be very tough in this modern age for a team or a franchise to reach that level as the Lakers did under his regime or under his reign. The only teams that are really out there, you look at maybe the Cowboys and the Yankees, and maybe the Canadiens in the NHL when they're doing well. As far as teams that, if you ask a lot of non-sports fans about the NBA, and tell them what's the first team you think of, you think of the Lakers. For baseball, you think of the Yankees. NFL, it's the Cowboys. And the ability for him to not, for Jerry Buss and that entire organization, to not only have that flair and that swagger and actually be a winner, is something that was very commendable. So it's going to be interesting to see how the Lakers handle this on the court and off the court. But it's always good to reflect on when a legend is lost and the contributions that he made to the team. Once again, thank you for listening to this edition of the Sports Inquirer podcast. We're going to be returning next week with some thoughts on the Daytona 500, some more NBA analysis, and the UFC pay-per-view event as well. Until then, have a good fight and a good night.